her daughter, 10 grandchildren, 8 great-grandchildren, her brothers, as well as many friends. A memorial service will be held at the Young Funeral Home. Final arrangements for Rebecca Sue Newton have been handled by the Young Funeral Home. And that's it for your final notes for today. Complete obituary information is available to you on our website at butlerradio.com.
When you sit down and really consider your priorities, your family and health are tied for first place and are directly related to each other. Have you thought about how everyone in your family and even your extended family would be affected if someone died? At the Martin Funeral Home, they are prepared to help the entire family through these life changes. No doubt, the death of a loved one is devastating, and the grieving process varies from person to person. All death-related business matters are handled personally by a member of the Martin family, either Ross or his son Tom Martin. For personal preference at a funeral home, let the Martin Funeral Home handle everything. The Martin Funeral Home, located on Center Avenue in Butler.
Looks like we have a nice day today, so enjoy it with some sunshine and a high of 74. Mostly clear tonight with a low down to 55, and then it looks like Tuesday some sunshine with a high near 83 degrees. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Your news time is 12:31. Dave Malarkey's coming up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Had some clouds, but we've had some sunshine and blue sky as well, and that's just what the weather folks had told us we would have, partly sunny skies. Temperatures are already up into the low 70s, and that's very pleasant. We've had this sort of weather for the past 2-3 weeks now. Generally speaking, highs in the 70s, partly sunny skies. Had a couple of rainy days, but by and large, it's been very pleasant. And that's nice, not too hot. As you just heard Tracy say, however, it's going to get hot starting tomorrow. Will this be the last heat wave of the summer? You know, technically it's still summer for another, week or so. Well, I don't know. And we're going to see temperatures in the 80s starting tomorrow and maybe mid or even upper 80s by Wednesday and Thursday. So I guess that'll be nice, maybe one more time before we get ready for fall. Open talk on the first portion of the program today. 283-2525 is our number. Anyone who wishes to comment on the life of the late Guy Travaglio, please join us. We'd welcome your comments as a tribute to Guy. 283-2525. I'm sure most of you have heard the news by now. Guy, who had been in poor health, especially for the past few months, died on Saturday at the age of 93. I knew him very well from the years that we worked together here at WISR and also on some community projects. Guy was very much involved in community service. He served on more boards than you could count and headed up more committees than you could count. But a longtime radio guy, and then after he retired from radio, he decided to run for the State House, and he won. He won the 11th District seat in the State House of Representatives and held that seat for 5 terms, 10 years, before he retired for good. Guy Travaglio. He was one of the most sincere and honest and humble men that I've had the privilege to know. Really. He always had a smile for everyone, and it was a genuine smile. You know, it wasn't a fake-o smile, a fake-o handshake. He always seemed happy to see you. The rare person who always had a smile for everybody. And I think there's hardly anybody who lived in the Butler area for any length of time who didn't know or know of Guy Trevallio, because he was a man who truly left his mark on the Butler area. He died on Saturday morning. We always used to kid about St. Patrick's Day. He knew that I was an Irishman. He would always send me a card. When we were working together, we would leave it on my desk here at WISR. And then after he went on to serve in the state legislature, and even after he retired, I'd always get a St. Patrick's Day card from him, and it would always say, "You know that St. Patrick was really Italian." And he would say that every year. We always had good laughs about it. I remember that for a long time. Guy Trevallio. Did you know Guy? Did you know of him or his good works? Share your thoughts with us at 283-2525, 283-2525. He lived a long life and a full life, that's for sure. He was 93 years old. Funeral arrangements being handled by the Martin Funeral Home. Visitation will be there tomorrow evening, and then on Wednesday afternoon and evening at the Martin Funeral Home on Center Avenue in Butler. The late Guy Trevallio Jr. Some of you may have known him just from his hosting record hops. Remember those? He was a disc jockey at Danceland. I have no memories of Danceland because I didn't grow up. I didn't spend my younger years here in Butler, but I've talked to a lot of people who remember it well. And he didn't just spin records at Danceland. He brought in some big-name artists to perform here in Butler. Groups like the Platters, Bobby Vinton, Guy brought the Butler, Luke Christie, who's still around, still performing, by the way, these decades later. So some people know him from that. If you were around for Danceland, or maybe you just knew him from many of his community service projects, or, and this perhaps would be the greatest tribute you could say, maybe you didn't know him personally, but you felt like you knew him from his on-air work on the radio for many, many decades. And what you heard with Guy was really him. There was no fakiness about him, that's for sure. He was much loved, and he will be greatly missed. 283-2525 is the number if you have anything to say about Guy Trevallio, if you knew him or knew him well. We had it turned out to be a bit of a premature retirement party for him. When he retired from WISR Radio, he had been station manager and general manager at the time. And this was back in the 80s, mid-80s, I think. We had a retirement party for him. Huge party. I remember it well. We filled the Vagabond Hall over in Lindora. It was packed with friends and people who knew Guy, and just wanted to thank him for his work and community service and so on. Little did we know that he would decide a short time after that he was going to enter politics and run for the state house. Actually, I believe that Guy served a term on Butler City Council much earlier than that. He served 10 years in the State House as the 11th District State Representative in the central part of the county. What a guy, huh? Yeah, what a guy. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Open talk here on the program today. We are coming up on a significant anniversary, day after tomorrow. It's a sad anniversary, but we mark it every year. The terrorist attacks on the United States on what we now know as 9/11. Happened on the 11th of September, 18 years ago. 18 years ago. It was 01. Can it be that long? Yeah. If you were around then, I'm sure you remember exactly where you were on that morning, September 11th, when the first plane hit the World Trade Center in New York. And we really didn't know what was going on. I can remember I was in the newsroom. It was around 9 o'clock or so, shortly after 9, that word came over the wire, the news wire, that a plane had crashed into the World Trade Center, one of the twin towers of the World Trade Center. And my first thought, and it was the first thought of most people, it must have been a small private plane. You know, a Piper Cub or a Cessna or something like that. It wouldn't have been the first time that that happened. Not to the World Trade Center, but there had been a couple of planes that had accidentally crashed into the Empire State Building years and years before that. And that's what I first thought. You know, oh gosh, terrible accident. We had no idea that it was a terrorist attack. We had no idea that it was a jetliner, an aircraft full of people. Until a short time later, there was another one. And there was some video captured of this one. And boy, when you saw it on TV, you know, you just froze. Because we knew then that we were under attack. And there was more to come, you know. Another jetliner full of people crashed into the Pentagon. And one crashed here in western Pennsylvania near Somerset. We'll talk about that on Wednesday. We have a special guest who will join us to talk a little bit about the history of that attack. Well, let's go to the telephones. It's open talk here on the program today, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Am I remembering wrong, or did Guy Tavario not have an appliance parts store on Pillow Street and work in it himself at times?
Well, as I recall, it was his mother that that operated that store.
Okay, I wasn't sure, but I just remember the name Guy Trevelyo being associated with that store.
I don't doubt that Guy put in some hours there, but it was, I don't know whether his father was involved or not, but I can remember his mother was still alive. The store sold appliance parts, you know, if you needed a part for your washer, your dryer, or something like that.
Yeah, and there's not little parts stores like that left anymore.
No, there aren't. It was on Pillow Street. I think there's a tobacco store in there right now, I believe.
Yeah, I was going to say a tobacco store, maybe a beauty salon.
It could be.
I lived in that area, and I thought I remembered that, but I do remember that about it.
The beauty salon might be next door. I don't know. I was never in there, but I know
it's been
that
a long time.
I know that's where I was. I wouldn't doubt that, especially as a youngster, a guy had put in some hours there. I'm sure that was the case. Did you know Guy Trevelyo?
No, only from the dances out in Herman and Cubs Hall, and then I believe it was the YMCA.
He did them in a lot of places. I know that his big disc jockeying work was at Dance Land. Did you ever go to Dance Land? Do you know where that was?
No, I don't.
I don't either. I didn't grow up here in Butler, so
I didn't. I grew up in Eau Claire.
I've heard of it, but I didn't know where it was. You grew up in the thriving community of Eau Claire.
Yes.
I know Eau Claire well. I grew up in an even smaller town quite near there. Nice to have you with us.
And I do remember him having a radio show on, what was it, Sunday afternoons?
Guy Trevelyo.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. He was on the radio. He had programs Sunday afternoon. He did a guy's phone party, a buy and sell show for decades.
I do remember that one, but I thought I was right with the Sunday afternoon. Or I guess we'd call it oldies now, but yeah, it wasn't oldies then. But
yeah, they were newies back then.
Yeah. Okay, that's all. I was just curious about the art store on Pillow Street.
I appreciate the call. Nice to talk with you today.
Uh-huh.
Sure. Bye-bye. Ooh, the dog there in the background, huh? 283-2525, memories of the late Guy Trevallio. It's hard to think of him as the late Guy Trevallio because he had such a presence, you know, such a presence here in our community and in many people's lives, quietly, humbly, but he was always there to lend a hand when somebody needed help or a group or an organization needed help. That was Guy. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk on the program today. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hello. I didn't know him personally, but when he would speak to you, you kind of felt like you really knew him already or he knew you already.
I agree. Yeah.
And I wonder if he may have started garage sales going on in the Butler area.
He advertised them a lot.
It was his program on probably Speak Up or Calling In Phone Party or something that he set up somewhere in Butler, an empty lot kind of thing, and asked people to bring things in their cars and sell them out of their car. Hmm. And my neighbor and I did that, and at that time in my life, I was a lot younger and had a big family, and I was making my own bread. And I sold bread there.
Wow.
And I had a customer, a man that bought my bread, and he did become a customer of mine. So it was a memory from a long time ago. And I wouldn't be surprised. That was kind of the root of where garage sales started, you
Could
know,
be.
With people selling things instead of from the phone party, but from their garage sales.
Do you know where that was, by the way? Do you remember?
No, I don't. It was some empty lot somewhere. It wasn't big, but we all had stuff in our cars and our trunks, and that was, I feel, the beginning of it for me anyway.
Yeah, could well have been in this area. Hey, thanks for sharing the memory. Nice to talk with you today.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
283-2525, memories of the late Guy Trevallio here on the program today. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Thanks for waiting. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
This isn't about Guy Trevallio. Is this open mic also?
It is indeed. Sure. Go right ahead.
I just had a question. I don't know if you would know or any of your viewers would know. What happens to the money that the government gets for you not having health insurance, like that $975 tax? You know, you had to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
They base it on if you had kids or how much you earned and stuff.
You're talking
if
about
you know where
for
that money actually went.
You're talking about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare?
Yeah, yes. But the fine for not having the insurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that's in place anymore. I think Trump got rid of that.
No, it isn't, but it was the last few years because I've known a few people that had to pay it, and I was wondering where the money went.
My guess is because it was a it came due whenever you filed your income tax, you know, on April the 15th. So my guess is it went into the general fund of the U.S. Treasury. I don't think it was earmarked for anything in particular.
Yeah, I know, because I tried to look online and they didn't have anything where it actually goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's it helping out?
I couldn't tell you for sure. It was only in effect for a few years, and then Trump canned it. So, and that was a year or two ago.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Somebody else may know. Was that money, the penalty that people paid if they did not have health insurance, and you had to check that off on your income tax when you filed your federal income tax with the IRS. Was that money earmarked for anything specific, or did it just go into the general fund, the Treasury of the U.S.? I don't know. I don't recall it being earmarked for anything specific, but maybe it was. If anybody knows, let us know. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk here on the program today, 283-2525. I mentioned we have a special guest coming with us on Wednesday, the anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. His name is Garrett Graff, by the way. And he's written a book called The Only Plane in the Sky, an oral history of 9/11. And the only plane in the sky refers to the plane that was carrying President Bush hopscotching to various Air Force bases in the southern part of the country to keep him safe, because they didn't know whether the terrorists were targeting the president or not. Yeah. Really strange story to think back on that. Okay, let's go to the phones again. 283-2525, open talk. Hi, caller, this is Dave. Go right ahead, it's your turn.
Dave, I don't want to rain on guys' parade, but have you noticed the bottom of North Main Street, that area that's it's like going through a rumble strip?
I don't know what the heck this is wrong with, and I have to think that's a PennDOT problem, because that's a state highway.
Every year.
Yeah, it's not the city of Butler's problem. PennDOT takes care of it. That road was starting to deteriorate, and you're talking about right at the bottom of the hill, just before you get to the Penn Street intersection. That road was starting to cave in 3 years ago, at least, before they repaved Main Street. Do you remember that?
Right.
And they came in and repaved Main Street from, oh gosh, up to top of the hill, the whole way through Butler and south of the city. And they just paved right over those bad spots. Well, you know, anybody could have figured out that that wasn't going to last. And the very next year, it started to cave in again. They patched it. That didn't work. Last year, it was getting really bad, and they laid down some strips, you know, not just patching the potholes, but they laid down strips.
Mm-hmm.
And now that has totally deteriorated, and it's worse than it was. I can't they understand that they need to dig that up and fix it, whatever the problem is underneath there?
That's unbelievable.
I know.
I came down over that hill the other day, and I hit that, and I thought, wow.
The first one. I come down that every day. And the first one, as you're coming down the hill and coming up to the red light there at Penn Street, there's a hole there that I swear to goodness you could blow a tire on if you hit that pothole.
Exactly.
That first one. And then you see people swerving. They realize what's coming up, or if they know that they're there, they swerve either to the left or the right to miss it. And if you're going to swerve to the left, you almost have to go into the opposite lane of traffic. That's an accident waiting to happen.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know.
All I have, but I did know a guy, and he was a super good guy.
He was, really, that's for sure.
Thank you.
Thanks. 283-2525 is the number. I'm not sure what the story is with PennDOT on that problem. Now, whenever Main Street was repaved, it's Route 8, of course. Main Street is a state highway running right through the center of Butler. When it was repaved a couple of years ago, it was a contract job, as I recall. In other words, it wasn't PennDOT construction crews who were doing the paving, but it was a contractor who had successfully bid on the job. And that's the case with most of the big construction projects on state highways. They're bid out, and they go to the lowest responsible bidder. But I you know, it would have been the specifications that were prepared. You know, not necessarily the company that did the job. If PennDOT hadn't prepared specifications that said, fix whatever is causing this road to deteriorate on a regular basis right at the bottom of the hill before you pave it, well, then they wouldn't have done it if it wasn't in the specs, because that's how they prepared their bid. That's how they said how much it would cost if they were selected to do the job. And it was fine for a few months, you know, right after they paved it. But then it started to deteriorate again, just like it had before. And now it has deteriorated two or three times since then, despite repeated patching. I'm no civil engineer, but it would seem that there's, you know, some sort of a pipe under there or something that is collapsing or failing, and that it's just falling in. Something's wrong with underneath the road surface right there. It's not a real long stretch. It's probably 50 yards, I'm estimating. I certainly haven't measured it. But if you're coming down North Main Street Hill and you hit a couple of those potholes, they're not quite as bad going the other direction, although still torn up there. They've patched that several times, too. But right now, after the latest patching, if you're going up the hill, it's not quite so bad. If you're coming down the hill, I want to tell you, there's some potholes there that'll rattle your eye teeth. And, you know, I can't imagine that just patching them again is going to make any difference, because that's been done several times, and it doesn't take very long. And with winter on the way, you're thinking what I'm thinking. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Open talk on the It's Your Turn program today. One of our sponsors on the program is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They're located in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. It's off Newcastle Road, right behind Kings and Villa Grande restaurants there on Newcastle Road. The Shockey Mini Storage Complex. What do they do at Gone Postal Butler? Well, it's very simple. They package your items for shipping. If you have items to ship out and you don't want to bother with trying to find the right size box or the envelope or the bubble wrap or the, you know, those styrofoam peanuts or whatever, everything else that goes with packaging items up for shipping, to say nothing of the special tape and the mailing labels and all that, just take your items to Gone Postal Butler. Very, very convenient. Very fast and very affordable. I've utilized their services. It's terrific. You can ship any way you want. U.S. Postal Service, FedEx, UPS, that's your choice. Other services offered at Gone Postal Butler include the copying, scanning, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox. They even have an official notary if you need something notarized before it gets shipped out. Gone Postal Butler, open Monday through Friday. Call them at 724-841-0044. Located in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex right behind Kings and Villa Grande restaurants on Newcastle Road. Your friendly neighborhood shipping center. It's Open Talk, 283-2525. Let's go back to the people. Hi there, caller. Hi. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm just fine. Nice to talk to you today.
Hey, Dave. you know where the Honey Bear gas station is on top of Jefferson Street Hill?
I know exactly where it is, yes.
Hey, try going down there to Monroe Street. Take a tour and see. That's worse than over in a foreign country. You know, it's been there for years. They've dug up, you know, and put lines and stuff. But still, that has been at least a year or two. I travel that a lot. And I want you, you know, just to take a tour of that.
I will.
Top the Honey Bear down to Monroe Street.
I very seldom come down
that.
I very, very seldom come down that hill, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, if you can, Dave, today, or, you know, when you have the time, that is ridiculous up there in Main Street. I know there's going to be a wreck there or something, people cutting over. This is a main hill there. It goes down, and then it makes into a two, so you can get on the left lane to go, you know, over towards Center Avenue.
Yes, I know.
There's a, you know, the divide. And I thought, I could, this, it's been there, it's been years. Now, I'll trust you, Dave. You're a good guy to do things. Just take a tour today or something and see how you like that road.
I'll check it out.
Thanks, Dave. You do a good job for people.
Okay. Good to talk with you. Thanks very
have
much.
Have a good one. Bye, Dave. Bye.
If you happen to be going out Katanning Street from that intersection at the bottom of Jefferson Street Hill, that road's a mess, too. Going out Katanning Street or coming back in, it's really a rocky ride. You bounce all over the place. There are some other places, too, no question about it, and funds are limited, but these are places where it's particularly bad here in the Butler area. I will check out that stretch of what's commonly referred to as Jefferson Street Hill, coming in from Chicago. It's State Highway 2, Route 68. So again, even though it's within the city of Butler, it's not the responsibility of the city of Butler to keep that road in good shape. It's PennDOT's responsibility. Yeah. And by the way, while we're talking about it, I'm very happy to see that PennDOT bid out a tremendous renovation work on the Route 422 bypass around the city of Butler. It's taken all summer, and it's not done yet. But if you haven't been on it within the past couple of weeks, they've started to lay down the new asphalt, the blacktop. It looks like they're putting three layers of it down, so it should be smooth sailing on the bypass once they wrap that up. And I would suspect that'll be within the next couple of weeks. But they put in all new Jersey barriers. They're putting in new guide rails along the sides of the road. It's a major project, and it's going to be beautiful when that's finished. The next road they ought to look at, I think, is Newcastle Road in front of Butler Crossing. Well, that whole stretch, really, from the Target store on up to Moraine Point. It's not the worst road, but it's really deteriorating pretty badly. That's a rocky road, too. In fact, I kind of thought with the PennDOT maintenance headquarters right there that that might be due for resurfacing this summer, but obviously it's not on the list. Maybe next year. And yes, that's a state highway too. Yeah. Okay, we've reached, goodness, we're just past the 1 o'clock hour now. So we'll take a quick break. Coming up, we're going to be talking about the curse of Oak Island on the next segment of It's Your Turn. Randall Sullivan has written a book on it. Maybe you've seen the show on TV. Curse of Oak Island, yeah, it's on it's Discovery Channel, I believe. There's been stories, there's a series on it on TV. It's been on for a few years. So is there really an Oak Island? Answer, yes. And is it really cursed? Well, I don't know. We'll see what Randall Sullivan has found out on his research. We'll be chatting with him by telephone coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn on WISR. Back in just a moment.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
We'll be talking, listeners, on It's Your Turn here on WISR about the curse of Oak Island. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Randall Sullivan, who has written a recently published book on this story, The Curse of Oak Island. Randall Sullivan, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today, sir.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
I think many of our listeners may be at least vaguely familiar with Oak Island because there's a series running on the History Channel about it, right? For quite some time, I believe.
Yeah, a remarkably successful series that is in its sixth season.
Do you have anything to do with that?
Yeah, they brought me onto the show as they don't like to call it a cast member, but I was essentially in 2016. That summer, basically they were filming me while I was researching this book, and which was wonderful because they were basically paying all my expenses and paying me to do what I was going to do anyway.
Can't beat that. Folks, if you're not familiar with this Oak Island and Randall Sullivan's book, The Curse of Oak Island, it's the story of the world's longest treasure hunt. People have been hunting for a treasure on Oak Island for, what, a couple of centuries, Randall?
Since at least 1795.
So where exactly is Oak Island anyway?
Oak Island is in Mahone Bay, which is just off the south shore of Nova Scotia. The waters were very well known as a pirate haven back in the 1600s and 1700s, which is why people thought what was on Oak Island must be a pirate treasure for the first century or so of the treasure hunt. But, you know, it became more and more clear that it probably wasn't that. It was something else, but what that something else is, people argue over, and, you know, and all of their arguments have some validity.
Is this location anywhere near Halifax, Nova Scotia, or no?
Not far. It's about an hour's drive, maybe a little more, to Halifax.
You know who we should ask? We should ask Sidney Crosby, the superstar of the Pittsburgh Penguins here in western Pennsylvania, because he's from Nova Scotia.
Well, I would bet he knows the story of Oak Island far better than most of your listeners do, because everyone in Nova Scotia, everyone in that part of Canada, is familiar with the story and the legend of Oak Island.
A little bit about our guest, listeners. Randall Sullivan was a contributing editor to Rolling Stone for over 20 years, and it was there, Randall, that you originally reported on Oak Island, right?
Yeah, I went to Oak Island the first time in 2003. At that time, people weren't being allowed on the island and hadn't been in some years. The two old men who controlled the island just, you know, had decided they were fed up with visitors, and so just talking my way on and getting to know them was the biggest part of the job back then.
How did you get interested in it? How did you find out about it?
Well, I you know, historical mysteries sort of fascinate me as an idea or as a subject anyway, and when I was just sort of looking through, you know, what are the great, you know, historical mysteries that have endured. When I came across this treasure hunt that had gone on for more than 200 years and consumed so many people's lives, literally in some cases, but, you know, their fortunes and their sanity in others, I thought, what an incredible story. What could possibly sustain this level of interest across generations? And that was the starting point.
People have always been fascinated, though, have they not, Randall Sullivan, about hunting for buried treasure? I mean, we go back, gosh, at least as far as Robert Louis Stevenson, right?
Right. Well, I mean, what is more excited than a treasure hunt? And, you know, for one thing, anyone can join in, just about. I mean, the victor, you know, is whoever actually finds the treasure. And in this case, you know, the mystery of what was done there is so compelling. I mean, the works that were done on Oak Island are just, they defy imagination, especially when you consider they were done with primitive tools, you know, at least 250 years ago. So you have to assume that, you know, to have motivated people to do something so extraordinary, there must have been a really extraordinary reason to do it.
Mm-hmm. You talk a great deal in your book, The Curse of Oak Island, about the money pit. What exactly is the money pit, and when was it discovered?
The money pit was discovered probably in 1795 by three teenage boys. And all that, there is documentation of all that. You have to go deep in records to find it. But what initially caught the attention of one of them was a space on the island, a clearing, partial clearing on the island, where old oak trees had been cut down, and there were just the mossy stumps, and young oak trees were growing. Well, it had been an uninhabited island, and so, you know, that caught his attention. Then he saw that it was sort of a circular depression around the area, and so he got his two friends convinced that there was probably buried treasure here. What else could explain it? And when they started digging and found a sort of a patio of paving stones laid just under the dirt, then they became really convinced. And as they began to dig, they saw the ground they were digging in was pretty soft, even though it was hard packed clay all around, and there was a deep, you know, circular pit someone had dug. They got down 10 feet, hit wood, and thought they'd hit a treasure chest, but it turned out to be a floor of wooden logs that had basically a platform of wooden logs embedded in the sides of the shaft. They had to clear those out and they dug down another 10 feet, hit wood again. This is the treasure chest, but it was another platform of logs.
Huh.
At that point, they were 20 feet. They were 20 feet down, looked up at the walls of clay above them and realized, you know, if it caved in, they were dead. So they spent some time trying to find, you know, a sponsor, financial assistance, and eventually did, and a large expedition was mounted. People sailed to the island on a schooner with a lot of equipment and began to dig down, and they found other log platforms at 30 feet, at 40 feet, at 50 feet, at 60 feet, at 70 feet, at 80 feet, and at 90 feet, they found one with a stone lay on top of it, and someone had carved either symbols and letters or just symbols. There's argument about that in the stone. They removed it, and at the very same time, the shaft began to fill up with water. Some sort of flood system was triggered, and that flood system would defeat treasure hunters for, well, defeating them to this day, actually.
I saw, and I'm not a regular watcher of the TV series, but I did happen to see it. I think it was just a couple of weeks ago. Whatever episode was on, it seems to me that there was some speculation that there may once have actually been two islands, and that this depression was the result of you know, whoever buried the treasure having filled in the gap between the two islands. Are you familiar with that theory?
Yeah, I am familiar with that theory, and there is some basis for it, because the Oak Island itself it's got a very narrow waist, and it's basically two drumlins, which are hills, mounds, on both ends of the island, but they're very different compositions in terms of the soil and the rocks and things. And that narrow waist is really mostly swamp. So the idea that, you know, it was filled in over time, two close islands were filled in over time. I mean, the main theory is that somebody sailed a ship in between the islands and then covered it up by joining the two islands in what is now a swamp.
Wow. Listeners, we have to take a break. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Randall Sullivan. He's the author of a recently published book entitled The Curse of Oak Island. And we'll pick up our conversation with Mr. Sullivan here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're talking with author Randall Sullivan about his book, The Curse of Oak Island, the story of the world's longest treasure hunt. So how long has it been, listeners, since you read Treasure Island? I think I did it when I was in sixth or seventh grade. But there's always been a fascination with this. There have been tons of movies about pirates and buried treasure and that sort of thing. Some of them pretty goofy, some of them pretty mysterious. This one is obviously mysterious, Randall Sullivan, because we're talking about the curse here. What exactly does that mean? What was or what is the curse of Oak Island?
Well, I mean, I think I can take credit for coining the title, but I think a lot of people felt it was cursed for a long time. Six people have lost their lives in the treasure hunt. Many people have lost their fortunes and their sanity. And the place has a really spooky feeling to it, and that manifests in materially in the malfunctioning of equipment that works everywhere else in the world. But, you know, also a lot of people have had what they claim were supernatural experiences or paranormal experiences, at least on the island, or have been confronted by specters or creatures, and a number have, you know, had nervous breakdowns as a result. All I know for certain is that it is a very spooky feeling place, and being there on the island alone after dark, you know, raise the hair on the back of my neck like few things ever have.
Mm. I can feel the hair on my arms raising a little bit just hearing you talk about it. You've been there several times, I guess, huh?
I've been there three times.
Hmm. We're talking about...
For extended period.
We're talking about Oak Island, the curse of Oak Island. I don't know a great deal about the geography and the topography of Nova Scotia. I know there's a place called the Bay of Fundy, which has some of the highest tides on the face of the earth. Does that affect the bay where Oak Island is located as well, or is that in a totally different part of Nova Scotia?
They are very, very far apart. Bay of Fundy is on basically the other side of Nova Scotia. Mahone Bay, where Oak Island is on the south shore. And the Bay of Fundy is sort of on the west, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The initial expedition to Oak Island in the early 1800s, though, they did sail from the Bay of Fundy in a schooner to get to Oak Island.
And, of course, Oak Island, given its location then, would be directly facing the Atlantic Ocean.
I mean, it's very close to the mainland, which is why they were able to build in the 1960s a causeway, a land bridge, that allows you to drive onto the island. Before that, it was always reached only with ships. But, being able to drive on obviously has made it a lot simpler to get the enormous amount of heavy equipment that's on the island these days.
Is it owned by the government of Nova Scotia, or is it private property?
It's private property. It is the only place in Nova Scotia, I think in all of Canada, that has it. It has actually its own law that was passed by the Canadian Parliament to basically split the proceeds of a treasure if one is found. But everything is funded privately, and the island is owned by the Lagina brothers and their partners. Most of it is. And the Laginas are the stars of the television show.
Do you talk?
But they didn't start out trying to do a TV show. They started out just as treasure hunters, and it led to a TV show.
Do you talk in your book about who may have sunk in this ship and buried the treasure? Do we know which pirate it might have been, Randall?
Well, I don't think if that theory is true, and I'm not saying I think it is, but it could be. I don't think it was a pirate. I think it was probably some sort of Spanish conquistador. If that theory is true, just because of the timing and everything, it would only make sense that it was a Spanish ship from the 1600s, because that was when basically they were taking what would today be hundreds of billions of dollars of gold out of South America.
You have a picture of Samuel de Champlain in your book, namesake, of course, of Lake Champlain, New York, New England, upstate New York area. What does Samuel de Champlain have to do with Oak Island, if anything?
Nothing directly. He just is. He's the one who established the French presence on Oak Island, and the rivalry between the French and the English was a big part of the history of that area. I mean, at one point, Le Havre, which is the entrance to Mahone Bay, not far from Oak Island, the governor there invited French pirates to set up shops so that they could prey on English ships. So, I mean, there's been that kind of intimate relation, but it's also what caused the English forced the Acadians, who were originally French, out. Many people think the Acadians built what's on Oak Island to hide their wealth before they left. So there's a lot of theories that connect to this French-English rivalry.
We're talking with Randall Sullivan, author of a recently published book entitled The Curse of Oak Island. How was Franklin Delano Roosevelt involved, for goodness sakes?
Well, he had a fascination with Oak Island, having heard about it when he was a boy. And as a young law clerk on Wall Street in the early part of the 20th century, he saw an opportunity to invest in a company that was mounting yet another treasure hunt. on Oak Island. He bought shares, and then he convinced several of his friends to go with him to Nova Scotia to actually dig on the island, and became so captivated by the place and the story and the treasure hunt that he continued to follow it even when he was president of the United States and leading the country out of the Great Depression and you know, into World War II. He was still writing letters back and forth with the people running the treasure hunt on the island.
There's a picture of you visiting the set of the History Channel's series, The Curse of Oak Island. Is that still in production? Do they still go there every once in a while and do digging or searching or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, they're doing incredible things, actually. But probably the greatest, projects that have been mounted on the island. When I was there this past September, they had actually built a wall, a dam, that was holding back the ocean, something people had tried to do many times before, but they succeeded, so that they could look at ground that has been under, because the sea has gradually risen, land that was above the sea level 200 years ago is now about 300 feet of it is underwater. So just to be able to hold back the ocean and search that ground was an incredibly complicated project that cost them at least $1 million. That's the scale of the work that they're doing there.
There's a theory that the original manuscripts of William Shakespeare's works are cached somewhere on Oak Island. Do you buy into that speculation, Randall Sullivan?
Not that in particular. That theory connects to Sir Francis Bacon, who was the great genius of Elizabethan England, and there it is a lot more evidence than I would have ever imagined that supports this whole Bacon theory, that he and his followers did the works on Oak Island to conceal or to cache his works. And some of them claim that he actually wrote the Shakespeare plays. I don't believe that, but I do think that the idea that Baconians, are responsible for the work there is one that deserves some consideration.
Mm. You have another photograph of a newspaper article. I just read the headline, Four Perish Seeking Pirate Treasure. As you said, the curse. Just one final quick question. I got to let you go. How big is Oak Island, and does anybody live there?
It's about a mile long, and yes, there have been a family, the Blankenships, living on the island since the 60s. Dan's wife died some years ago, and Dan, who was at 94, just died a couple of months ago. Fred Nolan, who also owned another piece of the island, the surveyor, owned another smaller piece of the island. He died a few years ago in his late 80s. Those two old men who were bitter rivals basically controlled the island for many, many years. But now the Lagina brothers and their partners do, and they've made it more accessible to the public. I mean, you can't tour the island, but you can drive across the causeway and visit their museum at the other end.
You have a wonderful piece of art on the cover of your book. It shows the island and then the sea level and then under the island, under the water. It's a skull. So the island is the top of the skull. Yeah, it's kind of spooky. Well, as you said. Hey, listeners, this is fascinating stuff. The title of the book is The Curse of Oak Island, the story of the world's longest treasure hunt. The author is Randall Sullivan, and it's been a pleasure to talk with him on It's Your Turn today. Randall, nice to meet you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Sure. So long now.
When planning a funeral, many times there's the question of cremation. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler can answer your questions about cremation. Is cremation appropriate? Should there be a funeral service? How would your family feel about cremation? And of course, what's the cost? Keep in mind that even with cremation, it's a time to celebrate the meaningful life of your loved one. It's a precious time. Cremation has three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's local. Thompson Miller Cremation Program is right here in Butler at our newly created facility. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. So let's talk it over privately right here at Thompson Miller. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
WISR time, we are about 26 minutes now past the 1 o'clock hour. Nice chatting with Randall Sullivan there about the curse of Oak Island. Yes. One of our sponsors on the program today is Butler Motor Tours. You know, they have some great trips coming up as we head into the autumn and even the holiday season. You might like to take advantage of if you want to get out of town for a day or two, or in some cases, even longer. If you're planning something over the holidays, perhaps, how about a trip to Bethlehem, PA, and New York City? A three-day trip in early December. You will be stopping at the remarkable Bethlehem Sands Casino Resort, Christmas City, USA, Bethlehem, PA, and then off to New York City, where you can see the special show at Radio City Music Hall featuring the Radio City Rockettes. And then it's back home. You'll be stopping at a gigantic Christmas market as well. Nice trip in very early December. Or maybe just an evening out down to Ogle Bay Park to see the fabulous Holiday Festival of Lights. They're taking a trip down there shortly before Thanksgiving on November 16th. If you want more information on these or many, many other trips available through Butler Motor Tours, check out their website, butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com. Butler Motor Tours on South Monroe Street. They've been taking people from this area to places near and far for more than 75 years. Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. Program note, coming up tonight, we have Pirate Baseball. Stay up late and listen to the Bucks. They're in San Francisco to begin a long four-game series with the Giants. Airtime is 9:20 tonight for a warm-up from San Francisco. On the It's Your Turn program tomorrow, hope you can be with us. We're going to be talking about Alzheimer's disease and an upcoming fundraising walk here in the Butler area for the fight against Alzheimer's. We're also going to be talking about learning issues for kids, a guide for parents. You know, if you're worried about your child having a learning disorder, maybe it's just a behavioral problem. We'll be talking with Dana Stahl about that. And a man who now lives in New Mexico. He lived in Butler some years ago. His name is Michael Curran. He's a veteran. He was a journalist, a newspaper writer for many years. And now that he's retired from that, he's written his first novel. So we'll talk to Michael Curran about that on tomorrow's program, among other guests. That'll be the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn tomorrow. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, and we'll see you tomorrow at 12:30 for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680. Knights take their Gridiron Show on the road this Friday night down to Highlands, and we'll be there. Hi everyone, this is Scott Briggs inviting you to join Dave Bacon and me as the undefeated Knock Knights take on arch rival Highlands. We'll have all the action beginning at 6:30 with the Coach Brandon Mowry Show. 6:45, we're live at the stadium for the 7 o'clock kickoff. Not Football here in 2019, presented in part by District Attorney Rich Goldinger, Troy Allen Chevrolet in Slippery Rock, and Troy Allen Buick in Katanning, Conlon Tarker, Attorneys at Law, the Butler Health System, United Plate Glass in Butler, Kelly's Restaurant in downtown Saxonburg, Next Year Bank, the law firm of Dylan McCandless, King, Coulter, and Graham, the John Thrower Cement Corporation of Saxonburg, and Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers. It's Knock at Highlands this Friday night, right here on 680 WISR, WISR680.com, and as always, on the Trib Live High School Sports Network.
Skies, ducks and pigs and chickens call, animal carpet wall to wall, American ladies 5 foot tall and blue, sweeping cobwebs from the edges of my mind, had to get away to see what we could find, hope the days that lie ahead, bring us back to where they've led, listen up to what's been said to you, don't you know we're riding? On the Marrakesh Express. Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. All on board the train. All on board the train.
I've been saving all my money just to take you there. I smell the garden in your Casablanca going south, blowing smoke rings from the corners of my colored cottons hang in the air, charming cobras in the square, stripes your leathers we can wear at home. Oh, let me hear you now.
Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? Don't you know we're riding on the Marrakesh Express? They're taking me to Marrakesh. Don't you know we're